Hey guys, you are listening to the Dirty Sheets. I'm your host, Billy, and this week I'm not joined by Cav. I'm joined by a very special guest, former WCW superstar and my colleague on the brand with Vince Russo. It is Glyn Gilberti, the Disco Inferno. Did I say Glyn Gilberti? Did I say that right?
Yeah, that's right. Vince still calls me Gilbernetti. You know the story behind that?
No.
So the very first organization I ever worked for, like, I went right out of training school in Alpharetta, Georgia, and they had a thing called North Georgia Championship Wrestling, cable access, you know, low production quality, local wrestling, you know, back in 2002. And the guy that ran the MC of the show, his name was Sammy Kent. He was like a Southern guy, kind of like a Colonel Sanders gimmick. But like for a shoot, he was illiterate, right? Like he wasn't very good at reading and writing. Like that, I'm just saying, is, you know, this is just the facts, right? So like when he'd write the names down on the sheet, you know, like stuff, he just wasn't really good at, like, his literacy wasn't good. Like there was a group called, a tag team called the Nasty Critters. He would put down like the Nasty Crittle, you know, like this is like just weird, like little things like that.
Right.
But I was debuting, right? And my name was Glyn Gilberti. Right, but he was illiterate, so when he read my name in the air, he goes, "Oh, we're going to have one of our graduates from the school down there, Glyn Gilbernetti, is going to be debuting down there." And he said it wrong, okay, but he got on TV, and like I didn't know the Dirt Sheets back then or the, you know, the Observer, because I'd never even seen him before until I started training, and like guys in the locker room had the Observer and the Torch, right? But like I guess like because it was that guy went and somebody heard it, I was Glyn Gilbernetti for a while, even though I never intended to be Glyn Gilbernetti. I just want to be Glyn Gilberti. So it's pretty funny.
The people call you Glyn, or like some people do call you Disco, don't they? Is that
no, everybody calls me Disco. Nobody calls me Glyn. Like if, yeah, if you can count on five fingers, amount of people that call me Glyn.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So
my mom included. So.
Well, your mom calls you Disco.
No, she calls me Glyn.
Oh, right.
Because there's like not many others. She's included in the five of the one of the five fingers, you know?
These are all industry people. These aren't going to be people around.
Right.
Around and about Vegas, are they? Just,
no.
Just the people you met. No. Right. So we're here to talk about this week's wrestling, unfortunately. Although I did think that the pay-per-view was okay. We'll touch on SmackDown for just a couple of minutes because it was a show they put on FS1. And it seems like large chunks of it were just dedicated towards this Owens and Roman Reigns match. That's probably because you only gave this whole storyline 3 weeks to build up. Regardless of that, do you have any thoughts on SmackDown at all?
I got thoughts on the WWE product. Let me know what you think about this, because I ran it by Conan when we did our show. So whenever I go into these shows, okay, whenever I watch these, okay, I'm always watching them under the premise of, like, the ratings are not good, right? You know, the ratings have dropped to historically low levels, right? So what can we point to of what, why the ratings are dropping like they are, okay? And we had the Variety magazine article that came out that is the only, like, it's the only, like, go-to source now where people that actually have quit watching, we've surveyed them and they've told us why they quit watching. And so the number one reason that 78% of the wrestling audience is left, and only 12, you know, a very small percentage remain, is that the number one reason is that's too cartoonish. Okay, so I'm always, when I watch this show, I'm like looking at this and going, okay, is this cartoonish, what they're delivering to me right now, in the way like, okay, I'm not an adult, you're treating me like a child, you're insulting my intelligence, this is cartoon, this is fake, this is just too corny, right? And what SmackDown does amongst all the other shows is they tried to put as much of their serious stuff as possible on TV, but it's still littered with cartoonishness. And if you watch all of the shows every week, SmackDown, Raw, NXT, and AEW, SmackDown is far more serious based than any of the other shows, but it's still got campy cartoonish stuff in the middle of it, like still way too much. And you just look at the Roman angle and it's like, bro, it's like the only thing on their programming right now that you'd kind of take seriously and invest in, like, this is a serious story. And it's like, that's why they thread it throughout the show now, and that's why it's the only show on TV right now that's actually doing consistent, decent numbers above what they were before Roman came in, you know, so that's the way I look at it. What do you think?
What did you think was cartoonish about it? This, did you think the Sammy Slammy thing was cartoonish? Or...
Okay, I'm not like, if Sammy was the only cartoonish guy on the show, his cartoonishness would be acceptable because he's actually performative very well because he's very good in this role. He doesn't look like he's doing campy acting.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so he's a very talented guy given the spot they're putting him in, but he's delivering it to where it's like almost not cartoonish because he's doing it so well that the people that are trying to make the stuff look serious that are doing it, trying to, are making it look cartoonish, you know? Yeah. I give Sammy a pass because he's the second most interesting thing on the show.
Well, this is why, I pointed that one out in particular because I enjoy his shtick. So I wanted to see if you, where we were at with who you felt was.
Well, it's a great character. It's like the typical complaining millennial guy. So it's like, you know, like you're looking at this, go, this is a good, okay, he's doing this well. He looks like, you know, and you're invested in it. But then they put him out there with a guy like Big E, who is being way too over the top. Like, it will never, like, he's still doing the New Day cartoonishly character stuff and thing. And to me, that's like, that's what makes that Sammy stuff looks cartoonish, is when he's doing it with another cartoonish character.
Right. You know? Yeah, I think this is a far better show. I mean, my kid, who's only 9 years old, he thinks it's a far better show as well. His favorite characters are over on Raw, where, you know, we know Drew, and he likes the Fiend, and he's met AJ before, and these are guys that he's liked for a long time. But still he'll still prefer to watch Raw, SmackDown, sorry, and he'll say that the storyline is better. But yeah, within the show, the two hours are a much more bearable watch as well. That's what I'm saying. That third hour of Raw is really difficult to do. But yeah, I thought SmackDown was in this particular week. I thought it was a show they just had to get out there because it was on FS1, and I think they did mainly pad it out with this Owens and Roman stuff. But generally, week to week, anything that Roman does, even if it's this 3 week storyline with Kevin Owens, they're managing to heat it up to the point where you want to see the match. And that's because this character, this heel run that he's having, it's interesting whoever you put him with. Because whenever, if they even just all of a sudden we come out of this program with Kevin Owens, I know they're going to have the match on the steel cage match on Christmas Day. But even after we do that, and automatically we just like that, put him with Daniel Bryan, somehow by the time we get to the Royal Rumble, we're all going to be interested in Roman Reigns versus Daniel Bryan, because that character now has credibility and he has the viewer's eye.
I agree with that, but like, I think the interest level is maintained the whole time because the match is Roman's secondary storyline. The storyline they're doing every week on the show is the relationship between him and Jey Uso.
Right.
And that's and like, so you can thread that consistently throughout whatever he does. If that's still the underlying storyline between them, and then until they get involved with a character that's worthy enough to, like, okay, now we're going to build it to a big match between somebody. But like right now, the episodic soap opera storytelling is the relationship between Jey Uso and Roman, and they're just interjecting characters for them to reenact and enact with to build until they find somebody where he can have a money match.
But they've been very clear, though, like, in terms of, like, that is the storyline. And they've been very clear to have JB very love subservient. And he's no longer, like, fighting back and defending himself. And he's just taking these beatings. So they're not giving you any kind of – they're not putting any seeds in there where it looks like there's going to be any resistance. Because you remember, like, back in the day where Batista was about to leave Evolution, right? And there were little tiny seeds that, you know, he was going to leave. There's no seeds that Jay's going to leave. If you put the seeds in there, then that is ultimately the big match that you're planning towards, because you're waiting for Jay to, like, break away. You're kind of like the days where Virgil left Ted DiBiase when he was working for the Million Dollar Man. We've had all of these stories in the past where the master abuses someone and they get tired of it and then they rise up against them. They're not giving you those seeds, because they want to make it very, very clear that Jay is just going to take this, because there is no Jay and Roman match down the line. And I think that's, like, important, because if there was any kind of inkling of, like, Jay standing up to him and not wanting to be a part of this, then we would be looking at that one, that being the match that they were building towards, which they're not, clearly.
Well, when's the brother supposed to come back?
I think the brother was when he came hobbling out. I heard on some other shows that he was about 4 or 5 months away from being back, which...
Oh, 4 or 5 months.
At that time. So now it would only be another couple, I would say.
It's another element to the storyline. Another family member and injected the brother or the twin, you know, and stuff. So, I mean, but I think they're just doing what they can do. They're like, these guys are like, the Roman angle is just good TV. You can't put enough of it on there, you know? Yeah. And it's like, the Kevin Owens stuff, I thought it was decent storytelling compared to what you're working with. I'll tell you what they should do. Like, you know, I think me and Vince actually talked about this. Is like, okay, the one thing everybody's talking about, the biggest criticism of the match was that Kevin Owens is, why didn't anybody come out and help him? Like, okay, well, that should be the story for the next show. Why didn't anybody come out and help you? You know, if you want to build Kevin Owens and make him more sympathetic, make him more like, you know, tell the story why nobody wants to help a guy like him.
Yeah, I mean,
but what I'm saying, these are obviously things that probably never. we're just fantasy booking right now. Like that company, like the fantasy booking blows away the real booking every week on the internet. So it's like, because fantasy book is far more interesting. But yeah, it's just like, you know, I think he can carry this for as long as they like until WrestleMania. But I still don't know who's gonna work. They still don't have I don't know. I heard is that true? Big E, Brock, and him? Was that that what I heard?
No. It's if you're listening to this rumor that was out, you're thinking of Keith Lee, Drew McIntyre, and Brock.
True. Okay.
Yeah.
Keith Lee, Drew, and is that accurate?
No, it's not accurate. Not as far as
it can't possibly be accurate. So what are you hearing from Roman?
Anyway,
we're getting the Royal Rumble time now. So nobody's very concrete about anything, right?
No, because that's because they're not concrete about the locations and what they want to commit. At the moment, like, what they were planning to do was have Roman go over on any kind of part-timer who could come in. So they were looking at they're not going to be able to do The Rock this year. And the Rock match, they want to do, both parties want to do it in the California market anyway. If The Rock did it, he would do it in 2022 because that's when the XFL launches. So it'd be a good like platform for the XFL for him to be involved with wrestling for that year. So it won't be him, but they are looking at like Goldberg, Cena, things like that. At one point they were looking at Big E, but the whole thing with Big E hasn't worked. And some of that has been down to the fact that Big E hasn't been responsive to his own push. There's been issues where he didn't particularly want to be separated from the New Day, which is backwards thinking. If they're trying to push you and you want to be stuck in this group, then it's difficult to push you. But yeah, that's where they're at. But the problem is that they don't know where they're going to be. They've got Tampa booked for April, the football stadium, mm-hmm. but they don't know how many people they're going to be able to have in there and whatnot. And it's the same for the Rumble at the moment. The Rumble they could do without fans, and that's another thing I was explaining to Vince. One of the things that people don't understand is that it's Vince McMahon's choice not to have 30% of people in there like they're doing for all the NFL games. Vince McMahon is the one who thinks the Thunderdome looks good. Vince McMahon is the one who thinks that having like sprinkles of fans is a bad look that he's not a fan of. So in his
world, the Thunderdome fans are controlled too.
Well, not very well.
You don't even have to hear him. Like he's probably tired of like the live fans hijacking the chants and stuff and everything. Yeah, you but know, that... of course, to him the Thunderdome is going to be way better because you don't hear these the wrestlers, you know, cheering, booing the heels, booing the baby faces, and cheering the heels. You know, and in his vision, I mean, I see that a lot. You know, so I'm thinking like, unless it's a full house, it's like this. To me, this is like, it's better because of what would you do, bro? The crowd's going to be full with trolls. Like, who would be the type of people that want to be some of those small pockets of fans, these live shows? 100% there's going to be people trolling the show. So it's like, you know, I agree with Vince. Unless it's worth it bringing the fans back, I would just stick with the Thunderdome.
Well, yeah, he is looking at this big bang comeback of full fans and whatnot, but I don't think that's even going to be Mania. But you can do the Rumble with 30% capacity. You can integrate the Thunderdome along with fans in there at the same time, but I don't know if he wants to do that. From what I'm hearing, like, he's a really big fan of the Thunderdome, and he thinks that the NFL looks shitty, like the way it's doing its thing with the half crowd, not even half crowd, 30% crowd. Right. So we'll move on from SmackDown. The only other thing I was going to talk about is the Carmella and Sasha storyline. Just generally, how did you think that built up over the few weeks? Because obviously, this is Sasha's first thing that she's moved on from after Bayley.
I'll tell you what, visually, it looks like two hot Instagram models in an angle with each other. They're very well dressed on the show. They come across as stars. They look like stars. I just think Carmella is way more convincing on the mic than Sasha is. Right. Sasha's got this, she's in this weird place where she doesn't, you know, she's a baby face. She's not really convincing as a baby face. She comes across as kind of heelish when she's trying to do a baby face interview. But Carmella's actually a great heel. They gave her too much mic time this past. I mean, if the finish of that angle they did on SmackDown was you go smash her with the bottle, it didn't have to be a 12 to 13 minute segment. It could have been like 5 to 6. You know, Carmella could have said 4 minutes to heal her stuff. She comes in, boom. But like, Carmella talked for like 10 minutes. It seemed like, you know, and it's kind of like it's hard to do. You know, but she's been good in her role. You know, man, I'm like, it's decent TV compared to like other, like when you see just a couple nondescript average looking girls on television, just going out there and having a basic wrestling match. I like this instead.
No. Yeah. I agree with you. I think there has been too much of this women's revolution stuff, and it's been a lot. And when they do try and put people like Carmella in the spotlight, and even when they were putting Alexa in the spotlight, certain times you get this backlash from a certain portion of the fans who just want their Baileys and their Sasha Banks in the role. But like that isn't necessarily going to work. Like, nobody thinks about what's going to bring in any casual fans, and what's not going to bring in casual fans in the other shows, having Lana out there doing wrestling matches. There are different roles that people can occupy. For example, the Iconics didn't need to be split up. They could have occupied a role together where they were just doing their shtick outside of the ring. Like, there's different things that everybody can do, especially in the current climate. Not everything needs to go down in the ring. I would be utilizing a lot more backstage kind of stuff, and I'd be using the women in different ways, not just during this time, but permanently. We don't need so many average female workers, average looking and average female workers. Like, they don't need to have so much of this.
Right. Let me tell you too. Carmella is she's very talented, but it's like, you know, it's like we're like, because I think these people, I think they do good numbers with the girls, right? But it's like the like what you're talking about, you know, we don't know how many there should be on the show, whatever and all. Sometimes they get a little different. The problems with the time constraints, like they give these girls too much time sometimes that they aren't good at matches, or they give these girls like too little time that are good at matches. Right. But with Carmella, is like, I think they're missing a huge opportunity.
Oh, you froze for a second there.
All right. So my question is, why don't they address that fact that Corey Graves and Carmella are dating each other? Because that would be an interesting dynamic to have on the show.
Do you not think it'd be too difficult to get around if they
were? Why is it difficult? They're dating each other. Like, he would obviously be like pushing her, like, just, you know, beyond his, like, you know, as a ring announcer, he's going beyond his duty of trying to put her over. To me, it's just more, it'd be more interesting to act like, to see, but the announcing is bland on that show. They never have any type of banter, anything that to me, like, is emphasized the, you know, the storylines or stuff. So it's like, I think just be interesting stuff while she's on the show, you know?
I think they do allude to it. I think they do, like, he alludes to it in his own way, but like, yeah, it's not clear when it's right. Like certain comments that he makes. I mean, it's just all insider stuff that he comes out with. So, looking at the pay-per-view on Sunday, And we'll talk about the Carmella and Sasha in a minute again. What was your overall take on the pay-per-view again? Because I think the pay-per-views, the Thunderdome pay-per-views, have been okay.
Decent. I always think, like, they've got a very weird segment of audience, I guess, that they're trying to market to right now. Okay, and it just intersects with my concept of, like, if I was going to book a professional wrestling show, it's like, what would my vision look like, right? And to me, there's just the whole thing of just very over the top and treating the fans like they have no intelligence whatsoever. Like, okay, we get it, it's tables, ladders, and chairs, but we didn't have to pay some, like, you know, $5,000 an hour interior designer to come in and lay out a bunch of tables and chairs, decorate the set and stuff, like, because, like, we have to be told it's tables, ladders, and chairs, and this, here are all the tables, ladders, and chairs, you know? The set doesn't look like a professional wrestling set. Like, I'm not, like, into it, and this is, like, you know, this is, like, kind of, like, there's, like, the three shows over the holidays here. You see the Christmas trees and presents and, you know, All this silly stuff, and I'm, like, bro, how am I supposed to, like, get my suspension disbelief in the right place to start watching this? If you're treating me like I'm, like, this dumb, I can't figure out, okay, it's tables, ladders, and chairs. You know, that's the vibe I get, what they're trying to book. And this is where I'm sitting when I'm seeing what they're trying to deliver to me, you know?
Yeah, but have they not been doing that for, like, if you date back to the pumpkin at Halloween Havoc, like, is that was around for a while. So you think that that was campy then?
Because I think it's been campy for years.
Yeah.
But here's my point. We're on a year's trend of downward, you know, downward cycle in wrestling. And I want to point to spots like this in the trends and say, yeah, this is like the thing where we have an audience and they're watching this and we're not taking our product seriously.
We're in a 20-year downward cycle.
A 20-year downward cycle. And it's like, I was like, okay, doing this campy stuff like trends, you know, this obviously could be one of the symptoms of the problems of professional wrestling and why people turn it off. And I'm trying to bring stuff like this up because the people that have been watching for the past 20 years I haven't noticed that, like, you know, some of these things look really silly and cartoonish, which is like why a lot of people turn this stuff off. You know, and I try to point these things out to the people that like us. And, like, if you probably would notice it more if, like, you thought about it, you know, and looked at the trends and stuff, everything. But, like, every time it comes around, it's like there's things on this show that we like, but we're watching the show. So we're part of the audience that exists for the show, right? Yeah. And I'm just I've been saying for the past, like, month or two now, you know, when I'm watching the Bray Wyatt stuff, The Fiend, and the Firefly Funhouse, I'm like, okay, guys, you know, this character's been on TV for a while now. We kind of dig it because it's artsy and it's creative and stuff. But, like, the ratings are continuing to go down for professional wrestling. And, like, I'm looking at this as perspective now when I'm watching the Firefly Funhouse and everything. I'm like, dude, this looks like Romper Room. Like if I'm telling somebody to come watch this, I'm not pulling another adult into the room and saying, hey, well, watch this. This is pretty cool right here. An 8-year-old kid. And say, hey, look at this. This is funny. This is silly. Look at they're doing Romper Room with puppets and everything. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. You froze. So I'm just wondering if, like, some of the stuff that we might like Bray Wyatt, like, this character just isn't good for the product right now. Because nobody's watching it, it looks very cartoonish, it looks very silly, it's very difficult to take it seriously, but we're looking at it from a different spectrum of, like, the fans that are just the casuals. If the casual is trying to watch this, they're looking at this going, this is Romper Room stuff. And they're just turning off.
Yeah,
you know, we're more invested because we've been watching it, but I'm like, bro, I don't think programming like that is good for the product.
It's a weird one because I even had this, like, even back in the day, like, so if you speak to someone, I'm trying to think of a show that's an example. If you speak to people that try and catch any kind of TV series, like, or any kind of sitcom, even if it was, say, for example, it was Friends, and if you started to catch Friends on series seven or eight, and you just think like, oh, you know, Joey's dumbness or Phoebe's comments or Chandler's behavior or you know, the Ross with his like three divorces and all that. The characters are friends. They all had a background state which dated back to season one. The real comedy in most sitcoms and most series occurs in the first couple of seasons when they set it up. And if they manage to get up to season seven or eight, be it Friends or Seinfeld, you know Kramer, you know George, you knew who everybody was. It's much, much funnier and the comedy is much easier as you get through. Now, it's really difficult to join any kind of TV show at that stage. That's the problem with WWE. And when you don't come in at the beginning, anytime you come in on Bray Wyatt now, or even from before, and him with him transforming to the Fiend and all that, it does become campy and confusing, and you feel like you're too far gone to be invested in it.
Perfect example. You want to get invested in it, and they're like burning him alive. And you go, bro, you're literally laughing out loud at that point of how ridiculous. Bro, because here's the problem. And this is, I guess, the writing team, and maybe even Vince McMahon's mind is wired this way, but I know what Tony Khan's is and stuff and all that, and all these companies. Bro, they are way too big of marks for South Park. Okay, because what the shows are like, the shows are presented on a South Park comedy level, where it's like, there's always punchlines, there's always skits, everything's kind of like centered around funniness, and when there is mega violence, it's almost comical. You know, like where Dustin Rhodes and the kids are bleeding all over each other in the match where they have the presence of, they have the bunkhouse match in AEW where they had all the, you know, horse carriages set up around ringside like with the salon, but everybody's bleeding all over themselves and they're just cussing randomly and stuff like that. Like at WWE, like, you know, they're burning people alive. It's like we're looking at the violence and the violence isn't even to be taken seriously. It's like on a comedic level, you know, and it's like, I just wonder if just wrestling has gotten way too humorous and way too funny, and there's just way too many people that want to get their giggles into the show, that's what the tone of professional wrestling looks like, and it's just very difficult for people to engage in stuff like this.
Let me read you what my 9-year-old wrote about this match, this Inferno match, because it's weird, because what he says at the end. The final match on the show was Firefly Inferno match between Randy Orton and The Fiend, which was so crazy. I don't understand how The Fiend is still alive after losing by being lit on fire. Orton put gas all over him and lit the gas up with a match to start a fire burning The Fiend. The only part I did not like was that The Fiend had to lay down for too long after the RKO, which made him look weak. In my opinion, this was one of the most dangerous matches ever, and I don't know how they pull this off. It looked really good, and this is something you would see in a movie and something I would show people who don't watch wrestling to make them want to watch it.
For your kid's 9?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, at least they got the cover. Well, that's what they're doing then. Conan keeps saying this all the time on the show. Maybe they're just booking the show for kids and trying to build the next fan base of fans, like getting the when they're 9 years old and making them doing real campy cartoonish stuff, and just they're just drowning out the noise of the mature audience.
Well, I mean, he's 9, nearly 10, but he's still able to say that The Fiend sold too long. He sold the
RKO. Right. But think about that. It's like, if that's like, I'm listening to this is actually kind of eye-opening, you know, is that their programming resonates with like 9-year-olds.
Yo, yeah.
You know, they say, okay, so it's like, okay, maybe they're trying, but here's the problem. It's resonating with 9-year-olds, but something's happened between 9 and 18 with their product and the maturity level of their fans, because like their demographics in the 18 to 34 are atrocious. And you know, so it's like, I don't, you know, so whatever they're doing here to appease the 9-year-old, they're losing some other fans along the way, you know?
I'll tell you what happened between 7 and 9 years old is that between 7 and 9 years old, what he does now is he says, when we're watching Raw, he says, can we fast forward some of this? Or can we fast forward some of this? And so
what does he like to fast forward? The matches, right?
Matches where he goes, can we get to, he always says to me, Dad, can we get to the first ad break? What that means is that he knows when the match starts, there's going to be one ad break. Nothing's going to happen until this the ad break comes, and then after the ad break is when the match will start. You know, we're heading to the finish of the match.
Yeah.
So he doesn't like watching that beginning bit up to the first ad break because there's no point.
You know, the live betting on the booking markets would be great for these for the WWE program. Like, what spot goes to the? We'll get to the ad break. You know, the live betting, like, yeah, the over the top rope to the floor, big bump over, like, you know, you hit your own, you accidentally hit your partner and they argue spot. You know, so, like, everything they do to get to the break. Yeah. So, right.
It's usually like the baby faces send the heels to the outside,
right,
and then hit the suicida.
Right, the diamond was up. Like, yeah, plain as day, there was laying down. Like, hey, let's go to the break, you know. Jesus.
Well, let's run through these matches quickly so we can get some Aurora in. Because I know you got Russo in 20.
No, a little bit. No, he moved it back to 3.
Oh, right. Okay. All right. So we had Drew and AJ opening up the show, and we have Miz coming in here and essentially wasting his money in the bank. Do you just lots of questions here? Do you like the match? And then also, did you feel they ever had a plan with this money in the bank? A, for Otis, and B, from getting it onto the Miz? Because this just seems like a mess that they've just been trying to get out of the whole year.
And this match was disappointing to me on a level that I felt bad for AJ and Drew. And here's why. It's like they were coming. We're coming off like a week where they had very bad ratings. Everybody's highlighting on the wrestling media's. You know, to get their fangs out. You know, after WWE right now, the booking's terrible. Like, the anti WWE narrative was a full force this week, right?
Yeah.
And so I just see these guys like this pay per view comes up, and like it happens like this almost every year. You know, it's like for some reason, just after, you know, after big events they have, and just, you know, they just kind of taper off. They don't really have good booking after their major, their big events, right? So I'm just watching, you know, AJ. How old is AJ? 43?
I'm not too sure.
How old is Drew?
Drew's 35.
These are grown men that just give them a ring, ropes, and turnbuckles, and they'll have a great match. Because they're very good storytellers and they're very good at what they do. And I'm just watching these guys have go out there and just willingly subject themselves to just killing each other out there with the stunts and the tables and the ladder, just all the things. And I'm just like, wow, boy, the boys have always gone above and beyond to try to like get fan response during periods of time where we're like, the show has been hindered by nothing. It's no fault of their own. You know, like the booking's been terrible and stuff from there and these guys are just going out there and killing themselves. And I'm just like, I'm just disappointed watching that. Like this is I'm watching this match and we're at this point of the product where I'm not even like looking at how good it is and how good they're working together and how well they executed the finish and stuff and everything and how all the pieces work. Cause in WWE programming, that's one thing they do very well is the theatrics production and the timing and stuff of finishing sequences in the WWE. Usually it's very, very well done. Okay. And I'm just watching these guys just kill it out there and doing this. And then afterwards I'm like, I didn't even know him, but AJ come on TV. He's got a big shiner on his cheek up busted up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God almighty, man, this is like, you know, these guys are having to go out there and do that because their product is not doing well, you know? And I'm like, wow, this is just, it's just hard. It's for being a wrestler, it's very difficult to watch, you know?
It's a longer term problem, and it's not, and it's something that they, I don't know why they ever started this, but I've always spoken about hating the gimmick pay-per-view, about how you must have a feud heated up enough every October to go into Hell in a Cell. And how you must, every December, you must be in a situation where two guys have a rivalry which is hot enough to have a TLC. Because the pay-per-view is called TLC and the pay-per-view is called Hell in a Cell. But now they don't even book well enough, or they're too lazy to even have the rivalry heated up enough. They had Uso and Roman at Hell in a Cell, and then they had Drew and Orton, which is fine because it was Drew and Orton Part 3. So that one worked. But these TLC matches, they were simply just, you're the number one contender, your title shot will be TLC. Made right. no sense whatsoever. And not only that, but they did two of them on the same night, at least with the Hell in a Cell, which they did three of, Sasha Bailey, Uso and Roman, and Drew and Orton. There was variants where Sasha and Bailey mainly conducted their match inside of the ring. Roman and Uso did a very different match to Drew and Orton, in that they did the whole thing where Roman had to, they did an I Quit match inside the Hell in a Cell. And it was Drew and Orton that did the Hell in a Cell match that was kind of more the traditional match where they got outside of the cell and everything, which actually, funny enough, was probably the worst Hell in a Cell match of the night. It was the third best out of the three, even though they did your more traditional style Hell in a Cell. In this instance, there's not really too many places you can go with TLC. So it was just the same match twice, other than the fact that Miz was thrown in. Did they think that throwing Miz in was the difference maker that they needed to differentiate the two matches? I didn't understand why they did this and why the Money in the Bank was wasted like this and why they were so desperate, why this was like some sort of chalice that they had to get rid of for the entire year. First, they gave it to Otis. They put themselves in that situation. They didn't need to do that, but they somehow, there must have been an idea there. I just, for the whole month,
let me give this to you. Cause like they're always, a lot of times on their shows, you can, in every show, with AEW's been like, every angle, angles are just reruns of something. Oh, hang on. So did you hear my last point, or did I went in out there?
You went out a bit. You were going.
Okay, so whenever in the past, whenever they've had like angles between multiple characters, like they've had factions or groups or the baby faces or tag teams and everything, they always do like the same angle, like over and over and over and over. Like if it's a like, you know, it was three baby faces together, one of them has a championship, you know, they're going to not get along, or they're going to hit each other, or they're just going to, like, you know, they keep doing all this, like, this repeat, you know, booking. And it's just like, you know, it doesn't, and they keep presenting the situations over and over, and they keep plugging just different characters into the same angles over and over. And it just, to me, looks like rerun booking every single time.
That's what the wrestlers call Bruce and Kevin Dunn. That's their nickname backstage is copy paste high five.
Yeah, that's amazing, because that's what it looks like. You know what's going to happen if there's three babyface characters? They're not going to get along with each other. They're going to accidentally hit each other in a match, and it's going to lead to a match next week. You know, just like, you know, and like, so it's like, how do you, like, you know, this stuff hasn't worked. You know, the ratings keep going down. It's like, you know, so maybe what you were doing, you know, the angle you were discussing there, maybe for one time they went outside the box. Okay, let's do something we've never done before, because maybe that might make sense, when the reality is the reason we never did it is because it doesn't make sense, you know?
So if you were to speculate, what did you think the plan was at the time? Did you think Otis was hot at the time, or... I can't imagine they ever wanted to make him the world champion. So I don't understand why they ever put the Money in the Bank on him. It never made sense on any level.
Well, and it's weird too, because, like, you know, when they had it on Otis, like, his character would have, like, it be not be too sophisticated, would just try to go cash in right away.
Right.
Right. So then they threw he's already not true to his character by trying to get him. Everybody's manipulating him to make him look like an imbecile because he can't figure it out, and they're suing him and stuff like that. Well, that whole thing just sent these characters on a downward spiral of, like, we're in this world that's filled with no common sense, and we're all fake, and it's all silly and stupid and stuff and everything. So it's like, you know, so when I see Miz come out of that, and, you know, he's still a very good performer and can cut a great promo every now and then, You know, but when he's doing the silly, ridiculous, cheesy stuff, I'm like, bro, you're just devaluing these guys of what they can do. You know, because like these guys could be in the serious stuff, but you're putting them in the comedy stuff. So even though Miz is a great performer, when he's interfering in this match, this three-way, I'm just looking at his character like he's an idiot. Why would he do this right now in the middle of a three-way? Like, he's got to be smarter than to think there's got to be a better spot than this.
Those are literally better spots in the build-up to the show.
Right. So it's like, you know, so you're saying, like, why do they keep making this guy look like a moron? His character is far better as a serious character, acting far more intelligently and cutting more serious promos. But they got him doing a buddy cop thing with Morrison, and they're both acting like idiots.
Well, everybody, you know, it's like, there's very, very few people on the show that don't act like idiots. Like, it's so...
They're far better in roles when they're not acting like idiots. You know, it's like, you see them not act like idiots, and they're good characters, you know, but they act like idiots just devalues everybody.
So, do you have any other thoughts on the match in general, or...
I mean, it was good because they're good performers. You know, bro, you work with AJ, everything's spot on. He's got his timing down, everything is just, you know, it's just good stuff. You know, it's just, I mean, those guys are very impressive workers.
How did you think we both liked the build to Sasha and Carmella. How do you think it translated to in a match?
I fast forwarded most of it, but Carmella is actually her work is not that bad because she looks very convincing with their offense and she doesn't try to do too much. Like a lot of these girls try to do things just for the sake of doing them and they don't look good doing them and probably nobody's telling them that doesn't look good. Don't do that anymore. But they like to do it because the guys can do it. She doesn't go there with her work, you know, so she stays true to things she does well and she's a very attractive girl and But, bro, her and Sasha dress like $1 million.
Yeah.
Like, every week on the show, it's like you can't change a channel when somebody with a hot chick comes out dressed like that. You know? So that's common sense marketing, you know? So then they speak decent. You know, Sasha's promos, I'm not a big fan. But you're not turning the channel even when she's up there talking, you know? So, and then their work is better than their mic work. So, yeah. So this works, you know?
Sasha's dress and attire and style and everything has been commented on by a lot of people recently.
She looks like she's got $1,000 worth of clothes on.
Yeah, and she looks good.
She's just like a Versace outfit. Like, yeah, it looks good, you know?
Yeah, it's all fitted, and yeah, it looks great.
Bro, there's a reason these Instagram models have like 8, 9, 10 million followers. You've never heard of these girls before. It's like you look at their pictures, they look fantastic. You know, they're wearing expensive clothes. So these girls have figured it out. You know, it's funny. They're in this age of like, well, don't objectify the woman. It's like, no, I'd like, you know, objectify. But tell the women not to be objectified. You know, those girls are not dressing sexy because they don't want to be objectified.
Right.
So they're cornering the market where all these other, I guess, unattractive people are trying to, you know, trying to tell you you're not allowed to, like, you know, talk about stuff like this. But like, bro, these hot girls know they're gonna make more money, and like, we need to show off some sex appeal here because we can get paid, you know.
Where do we go from here? So we had the New Day lost the tag titles to the Hurt Business. They've been
you knew that was gonna happen. So
they're having a load of matches on TV. Charlotte returns in a tag match. She replaces Lana. And her and Oscar win the tag titles. What did you think of that? Like in terms,
I'm not,
of
just in the follow up. I'm not. Charlotte's wasted with team with Oscar. Oscar to me is her work, and her character are completely separate, because her character is absolutely aggravating. It's cartoonish and aggravating, and annoying. Like when she's blabbering in Japanese and act like an idiot. And it's like, bro, this is not appealing. Like, this is not getting fans, you know, this is turning people off. So, I mean, I don't know, unless the metrics tell me different, but I think her character is atrocious. Charlotte with her is atrocious.
There's no metrics to say that you're wrong, because all the metrics are negative. I think when you're looking at these individual metrics on the show at the moment, you're looking at, you know, 20,000 to 50,000 people difference. And I don't think it's very much down to who's on TV. It might be for certain people. Obviously, you throw out John Cena out there, or The Rock comes back or something, you're going to see
How long have you been doing the Dirty Sheets?
I was on the steel cage as first, and I moved on to the dirty sheets since about 2015.
Oh, so it's been like 5 years.
Yeah.
Bro, did you used to get the Wrestling Observer, the Torch, and everything back in the Attitude Era and stuff anything during that time?
No, not the Attitude Era, because I was only 15.
Oh, you were only 15. Did you watch the wrestling back then?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've been watching since 1989.
Bro, it's just fascinating that part of the dialogue right now in professional wrestling is talk about the ratings. And it's like, if you just compare it over the years, it's like nobody's watching it right now. And like we're doing ratings analysis. It's like, dude, it's like, you know, you just look back when I worked, everywhere you went, the building and stuff, there's just an electricity about professional wrestling. It was on the map. It was like, it was hot, you know? It's just wrestling right now is just, it's just not hot anymore.
But they'll
it's
tell
not,
you.
It's not electric. It's not electric. It's not on the map. It's just because you got a lot of dull blades, you know, in the business right now. People are just talking about matches and work and stars and stuff and star rating.
Well, these are the people that tell you it's hotter than it's ever been.
If there's never been a better time to be a wrestling fan, then where'd all the wrestling fans go? You know, it's like you're trying to tell them to come back. Hey, guys, come watch this stuff. It's never been a better time. And like they're tuning in, and they're tuning out the next week, you know?
Well, this is the thing. Even Vince McMahon is conning investors in his investor calls because he's turning around and telling them that we've never had more fans and people now digest content via different means such as YouTube and other forms of social media. So he's got them convinced that they're digesting the content.
That's like trying to say that if you look at the Twitter, the social media connection of the WWE, like if you looked at the WWE universe, all the WWE corporate accounts, all the professional wrestlers that work for the WWE and like every related bit of content, and if you look at all their followers, right, and you add them all up, and you're following these people, and all these people have to do is tweet, and it shows up on your timeline, your news feed, and you see it that day, Vince McMahon's looking at you, he's like, hey, look at all the fans we got. You know, it's like that's like what he's saying. Because if you're talking about the fans, you're talking about like, oh, you got 80 million fans. How come you can't get 2 million of them to watch your show on Monday night? You know, it's like, you know, I mean, it's all BS. You know what I'm saying? It's all fuzzy math. They're making up numbers to try to make people that sound like stuff is not as bad as it is. You know, and they sound convincing when they do it.
Even if he was correct, like people are still choosing to digest your content in a more, like, less time-consuming way.
Right.
That would still be a concern to me.
Briefly. Yeah. Like, you're briefly consuming the content. You know, it's right. like, you're providing 5 hours a week for us, or 7 hours, including NXT. And we're watching the YouTube clips, we're watching Twitter, we're not watching the shows, you know? And, like, so when your advertisers or the TV networks are coming in with rights fees for the next contract, it's like, don't expect to make as much as you did before, you know, because you're not providing content that's driving us to watch the show when it airs, you know? And it's true that they're not.
Where are we at here? So there's not much more to say about the Orton match because that's lost. The match before that was the Universal title match with Owens and Reigns. I thought this was the best match on the show, but between these two, Reigns obviously wins.
Like, yeah, my only, it's good WWE theatrical storytelling. Okay, the work is good enough. Guys in the shows, all of the shows now are starting to throw more punches in the work instead of these stupid, ugly, fake looking forearms that nobody ever sells. So guys are starting to look more like they're fighting out there, which looks good. But this was good storytelling, but unless it's addressed, right? My just whole thing is like, why is nobody coming out there and helping Kevin Owens? So my suspension disbelief is not in the proper place because I'm wondering why this looks ridiculous. They're just speeding him up 2-on-1, like not one single person is going to come out and help the guy. And that's all I was thinking. So if they do address it, then maybe like, you know, I get the storyline back in place, but that was my only criticism. But it was a decent match, though.
What you're saying is the same as what my kid Austin was saying. He was saying, "How come no one's coming to help him?" And I said to him, "Like, who's going to come and help him?" And I think he mentioned that he teamed up with Otis a few weeks before. Well, that was the only ally I think he'd made over the last few weeks. But yeah, if there's anybody you can chuck out there. But I guess that's not the story that they're telling at the moment, where they want anybody to come out and help. So yeah. But that was the pay-per-view. Overall, I think the pay-per-view is good. And I don't think their pay-per-view presentation has been the problem during this whole pandemic. It's mainly been the fact that leading up to the pay-per-views, none of these matches are built up properly. So by the time you get to the pay-per-view, it doesn't really matter too much what you do in the ring. The fact is that the amount of people watching this pay-per-view isn't going to be enough to warrant the work that the wrestlers are putting in. Because
right.
I'm pretty sure they're doing whatever they can with the shitty scripts that they get. And some people are even doing more. I'm pretty sure that people like Sammy kind of just do their own thing. I'm pretty sure that the Roman stuff is not being produced by the same people that are mainly writing Raw and SmackDown. And even from speaking to Drew, I know Drew gets things and tries to sort of improvise and do more with it. But I think you can really see the people that are just reading out the exact shit that they're given to read. And it's not read, and it's not good. Like, the stories on this show are not good. The way that you got to most of these matches wasn't good.
It's cartoonish.
Yeah.
It's that's the thing. There's pockets of serious stuff, whether it be the work or a serious interview here or there, interjected in between all of the cartoonish nonsense they have to build the matches up. And you just watch it, and that's what it looks like. And it's like you see the workers, when they're in the ring, at least holding up their end of the bargain, trying to make this look serious. But the way they get the angles and the conversations of the wrestlers on the show is not realistic. And I've been saying this all along. It's like they have too many comic book marks writing shows there. Because the conversations between the performers
Was it Shane Helms that had an issue with it?
He's a big comic book mark. But I'm like, dude, I'm like, the wrestlers are having conversations that human beings are not having in real life. These are conversations that you see in cartoons and comic books. I guess whoever's writing these conversations are too big of a mark for cartoons and comics and not real life. And like, they're writing phony conversations, and the wrestlers are suffering because of it, because they don't come across as genuine characters. And the thing is, if these guys are reading comic books all the time because that's what they're writing, get rid of them. Because it's littering the show, and the show is suffering. You know, it looks ridiculous, some of these conversations these guys have on the show.
Oh, you know, the third eye stuff, all the backstage stuff, the conversations that they have are all awful.
Atrocious. Overly scripted. And I don't know how anybody could deliver the lines in a convincing way anyway, but the wrestlers are so unconvinced with the verbiage that they're delivering the lines in the worst possible way, which is like not convincing at all. You know, it's a catch-22.
How do you think that, before we move on to Raw, like, because I mean, this is a Raw question anyway. How do you think that they got into this corner, or into this situation, or into this way of thinking? I think is a better way to say it, where they felt like they have themselves now the perfect show. This is the way to shoot the in-ring. This is the way to do the matches. Go outside the ring. Go to the ad break on these certain spots. This is the way we cut backstage promos. This is the way that we shoot the promos, where we have, you know, you have guys talking to each other and then the camera shooting them. Everything that we see that has existed for about 10 or 15 years, we've not seen anything new. If you take a snapshot of WWF 1988, 89, 93, 97, even 2002, 2003, it was always a little bit different. Always new things were coming in, and then it was changing. I think this current snapshot of the last 15, 20 years has been exactly the same. Somehow,
it's a movie reel. It's not a snapshot.
Well, yeah, well, somehow
it's a movie reel. It's very difficult to encapsulate the snap, because, brother, the snapshot doesn't even encapsulate, because the snapshot from 20 years ago to snapshot 15 years ago, the snapshot 10 years ago, the snapshot 5, they're all completely different. Because they're all worse than the ones before, you know. What I'm saying? So it's like, you know,
But the format of the show is the same. Like, for the last 10 years, the format of the show is the same. So I'm just wondering how they came onto this format where we do our scripted promo in the ring like this. We do our scripted backstage promo like that. You know, just for example, the thing where, say, for example, they're going to have a ladder match, right? They're going to have a ladder match. And then every ladder match combatant comes out with the mic and he talks about why he's going to win the ladder match. And then the next guy comes out and says how he's going to win the ladder match. And the go-home show for every Royal Rumble, it's every single guy having a brawl to go home for the Royal Rumble. Like, we've seen that, right? And if it hadn't been COVID this year and we were doing the normal Survivor Series thing, it would be Team Raw.
It's backwards booking. They're coming up with the matches before they come up with the storylines to get to the matches. So they have the matches. So they work backwards. Okay, we got to figure out how to get here. And it's just a repeat of things that have been done repeatedly in the past. And I see it all the time. Jeff Jarrett liked to book like that. When me and Vince and Jeff and Dutch were writing shows, Jeff liked to have the matches, and we would have to figure out how to get there. And Vince used to like, okay, let's write story. Let's make build do character development, see what matches come out of the character development, as opposed to just, you know, trying to navigate your way into a match by creating a story. So it's like you're throwing a football, but you're playing it. You're playing the replay before the actual play happens. You know, you're throwing a pass. It's like we're trying to, like, we want to get to the point, right? We want to be there, but then we want to figure out afterwards how to get there. You know, and I think the journey is, like, in writing stories and stuff, things like, just keep moving forward, and you'll get good things that come out of it, but at least a logical progression would take place, because that's how life works. Like, nobody knows what's going to happen tomorrow, you know?
But do you think this is as simple fix as having a different booking philosophy and having new people in the relevant seats?
Oh, I don't know. I know a couple people in the WWE universe that work there, right? And they're pretty talented people, you know. And I've known people in TNA, you know, Impact, but when I worked there, that used to work in the WWE back when they were very successful, they're also very talented people. I don't know the people that got them working there now. Like, you don't know the names of any of the, like, there's no, it's funny too, is like Vince Russo has like this what do you want to call it? Like the, or in the Lord of the Rings, what did you call the evil army? What were they called?
I've not seen Lord of the Rings.
Okay, so it's like you have like Vince Russo has like this thing, like this army of evil behind him called like Russo booking. It's like everything.
I have it here actually, but it's sealed up. Like, it's still in the.
What is that? Oh, Lord of the Rings game? Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah.
So like everything that's kind of like outside the box in professional wrestling is like labeled like, oh, this is Vince Russo booking. This is something. It's like, this is what he does, right? But, like, of all the stuff, the shitty stuff that's been happening over the past, like, 10 years of professional wrestling, like, on TV, it's like, there's never been a name connected to, like, okay, who wrote that? Who was responsible for that?
So right.
And it's like, okay, maybe the fact that we don't know the names of any of these people and don't know what they've been responsible for and everything, it's like nobody can even call these people out categorically for what they're producing. Because categorically, they're producing a lot of very bad segments on television. And you kind of want to say, like, how can you erase some of these and, like, find out who's the one that's producing the most categorically bad programming and work your way backwards?
Yeah, you know, the only name you heard was when Ryan Ward came up from NXT.
I don't even know who that guy is. I've never heard that name. It's like,
Ryan, you know, everybody was talking about Ryan Ward, and then he got paired up with Road Dogg. And then when Road Dogg had Ryan Ward demoted again, they clashed because Ryan Ward was doing his whole thing at NXT, and then when he was over at SmackDown with Road Dogg, and they were supposed to be working together, mainly like Road Dogg went with his own stuff, Ryan Ward was moved down, and there was a big backlash online where like he was getting loads of hate tweets and all that kind of stuff. But that was
so. What's Ryan Ward's background? Who is the guy? What is he?
I have no idea. Like he basically popped up as a name. When people were starting to look for why NXT was a much better book show. And this is, we're talking back in, he booked it from like 2000, he was writing it from 2015 to 2017 before he got promoted to SmackDown. And then
you really kind of think about it. It's like, you know, if you do think about this, is there's, that's one thing Vince, I'll argue this with Vince too, is that Vince is constantly talking about writers, wrestling writers. I'm like, Vince, there's been writers for like the past 20, 25 years of professional wrestling. I go, in the past 20 alone, it's just been on a downward spiral the entire time. I was like, so you can't possibly tell me that like, you have to be a writer to know how to get ratings, because there's no history of anybody getting ratings in the past 20 years. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, so you could argue it's like, maybe wrestling does not need writers. You know, because we have a very strong sample size of like, you know, what wrestling needs is a people that have good ideas that they can translate to tell them. Bro, all bookers have been, good bookers have been guys with good ideas and very creative, and you're just nailing a lot of like, hey, you got good ideas for things. But in professional wrestling business, what happens is like, this was working with Dutch Mantel. It's funny, Dutch is actually very brilliant, okay? And he's very creative. But he made this comment one time, and I just disagree with this, is wrestling's just plagiarism. You know, we're just kind of like repeating the angles and stuff, and like, well, that's not very creative in the sense of the word to me. You know what I'm saying? And especially like all the hours of TV we've had over the past 20, 25, 30 years. It's like, this has all been done repeatedly over and over and over and over. So my whole thing has always been, it's like, okay, you need to get, start getting more outside the box.
Yeah.
But then sometimes you get too outside the box and you've lost your fans. And I think that's where wrestling's in their lane right now, is where they've just gotten too outside the box with too much cartoonishness, too much in-ring cartoonishness. And like all the old tropes of like babyface and heel and serious and, you know, heel babyface on it, we need to kind of maybe get back towards that, you know, towards that side of the business, because it's gotten too far away from seriousness. We need to bring it back more to like portraying this as a lot more serious than we do. And that's, and I think that's a solution going forward.
Well, so this week's Raw, it comes to this point every Monday. I'm sitting there through Raw, and you're always hearing about these rewrites and everything that goes on and these changes, and you're thinking like, wow, you know, with all this effort and all this like fine tooth picking and checking that goes through it, that it would be a perfectly booked show, or that it would be very close to being, you know, at least entertaining. Like, there's just nothing on this week's Raw again that you needed to see.
No, let me give you a perfect example. I'll just show you, perfect example. So the show ended, all right? The pay-per-view ended with a character getting burned to death.
Right.
All right. So, you know, obviously that wasn't, I mean, if it's to be taken seriously, okay, the first and foremost thing, the fans tuning into Monday Night Raw, okay, that any sporting event, any television show, any newscast, any entertainment genre, in any way you look at it, if we're trying to find out what happened, this would be the first thing they would immediately address, because it's one of the most serious things that ever happened to anybody ever in the history of professional wrestling, right? Okay, but it's obviously not. So immediately the fact that they're not even talking about it, okay, you know, and I always look at this as stuff as like, well, what's cartoonish and what's not? And I was like, are they gonna invest me in the show, or are they gonna turn me off? Right?
Would you open with a 10 bell salute?
I mean, something. Who knows, right? But like, you're not gonna immediately start with Asuka in the ring doing her blabbering the promos, everything you can't understand what she says.
Right.
Okay. So it's like, I've tuned into the show because I heard they burned the Fiend alive, and I care how they're going to do this. I turn it on, and it's Oscar's blabbering like an imbecile. And I'm like, all right, so this is the opening segment. Like, whoever was in the writing room interview and open the show. It's like, I'm just one. And like nobody talked anybody out of that. Like, nobody brought that up. No, it's like how could you have been talked out of that? Like that's the whole tone of the show coming up. You know, it's like, I'm just like, bro, like you look at these errors and like you go like, what are they doing there? You know? So then and then the funniest thing is like, so they have all these silly, you know, they have the girls come out. Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler come out. They're all this is atrocious verbiage. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, it was. No, I'm agreeing. It was. I mean, it was. I watched it with my kid, and he just goes, and he even said like, "Oh, women, when the women are talking is terrible."
Right, and the funniest thing is like the finish of this match was Shayna just getting a choke out of nowhere, right?
Yeah,
bro, you didn't need 13 minutes to tell that story. You know, have to choke because, bro, these girls, these specific workers right here. I mean, Shane is more decent than but the other ones are still kind of very green. The more time they have, the more opportunity they have to do stuff that does not look good. And 13 minutes for these four was ridiculous. You know, I mean, like it was not good.
Well, you have the same later when Charlotte and Oscar have to go up against Peyton and Lacey. They still had the same amount of time, not as much, but. But that was the time dedicated to them. And that's the problem when you have such a filler show. You're showing like long entrances. You're running through ad breaks. All the matches are too long. Right. And that was it through the entire show.
Well, let me give you this, right? So now we've gone through the first segment, which provided some ridiculous cartoonish shifts with Asuka. And Asuka and Charlotte go to ringside and do color as an extra rib here. Because now we get to listen to Asuka doing color in a language we can't understand what she's talking about, right? So, okay, so we're coming off the Fiend getting burned the night before. Very serious thing. What's going on? That all right? Maybe they're gonna come back from the. Maybe they're gonna come back after this, and they're gonna address it, right? So after this match, they go to the Hurt Business backstage. Oh, here's the Hurt Business. They're serious characters on the show, and immediately they bully some schlep backstage and rip his shirt or t-shirt off and make him wear a Hurt Business t-shirt. So like, okay, that's great. Now these guys are in a cartoonish thing, okay? So then they come in the ring, they're cutting a promo, they're taking a picture, R-Truth photo bombs the picture, and then the 24/7 schmucks come sprinting down the ring, the ramp. They chase him around, chase him all over the place, and chase him out. So now the Herp is in the ring. Now we have even more cartoonishness, right? Then Riddle comes out with Jeff Hardy with all these schmucks in the 24/7 thing still running around, and there's Christmas trees and Christmas presents surrounding the ring and the aisle. And like now the Riddle comes out and cuts a promo that's the phoniest cut thing, like the verbiage like you've ever heard. And he's talking like, so I'm still waiting for this show to be serious, and it's just been completely cartoonish for the first like 45 minutes of the show. And it's like, and I look at this and like, how do they expect people to watch this stuff?
When we do get to that segment, when Orton does do his shtick in the ring and he's talking about everything, and then we have the thing with Alexa in there with the swing. What did you think of that?
I mean, Alexa doesn't. I think that the person that's writing this is a big mark for Silent Hill.
Oh, I've not seen that. That's a video game, right?
Silent Hill. If you want, bro, this is like. This is just this. I haven't played a lot of video games. I played Silent Hill. This to me, the guy's like a total mark for Silent Hill. That's about the best way I can describe it. Like dark, evil children playgrounds. But you know, like it's. I mean, it's just you know, like I said, it's just. I don't know. I mean, she does it well, but is it too over the top to draw the casual fan? You know, is this too over the top TV?
Well, I think. Burning a man alive. I think when you're looking at the puppets and things, like that, I think it's a little bit of a weird thing for people to get into unless they've seen the background of it. I mean, if you watch a few episodes of Firefly Funhouse, if you're really dedicated, you can sort of understand what it's about. But I think burning a man alive, I think that's a good point to start. And I do, in a weird way, I do. But I don't think that they did enough with it. I think they should have opened the show with it. But it was weird. Once Alexa's in the ring and she does that whole bit with him, they then go to the announcers and they're really selling it and going, I can't believe what we just seen.
Yeah, and they're trying to, they're overselling it, like, they're trying to act like it's super serious. And you're going like, what are you, why are they doing this? It's like, bro, everything's just awkward. It's just very awkward. There's only, there's pockets of stuff that were not awkward on this show. Like, perfect example, everything, all this stuff is very cartoonish, but earlier, the 2 minutes of Angel Garza and Drew Gulak were actually very good television because it's very physical, okay? And when the T-Bar guy beat up Ricochet, looked pretty convincing as in-ring stuff. And, like, that's, like, some of the only stuff in the show that looked anything remotely serious. You know, what do you think about that?
I think the retribution thing has been dead.
That's absurd.
Yeah. Absurd. From how it started, I know it wasn't great from the beginning where they were, you know, I think they wanted, it seemed like they had, in their mind, I think they were doing like an Antifa thing with these guys, you know, taking over the performance center and everything like that. But it never resonated with people. But I still think they thought it was going to be something big. But from the moment they unveiled Ali as leader and then just put it in with these NXT guys, it was always heading downhill. And from where now where it's at, where you're just recruiting Ricochet, this isn't going to be a compelling part of the show. I think the main storyline they tried to weave in throughout the show was that, you know, for the last few weeks, they've been doing a thing where they've been going through the relationship between Drew and Sheamus. And they've had Keith Lee going up to Sheamus and saying to him, you're going to turn on your friend. You're going to turn on your friend. Like, now Keith Lee's like this fucking, like, nosy neighbor who that's his role now. Like, he came in as the big, and this is what I speak to Russo about. And Russo always says to me, he goes, this guy was never a star. How do you think this guy was a star? Like, this guy was never going to be. I don't understand what anybody ever saw in this guy because Vince doesn't watch NXT. And I'm always trying to explain to him, going, yeah, this guy was really good in NXT. Like, he didn't say.
Yeah, but NXT is even they have a live crowd. It's a friendly live crowd. It's a partisan live crowd. It's a very niche audience, the NXT, because the takeovers are a very niche, smart group. Because the thing is, bro, they know this product is good, but it's still a niche product because not a lot of people watch NXT because the perception in the wrestling fans' mind is like, oh, this is just a developmental. And I know this because I was one of those people that thought like that. I would watch NXT haphazardly just here and there, and I would see a match that had some of their students or green guys in it. And I thought they looked green. I'm like, oh, this does not interest me. And the problem is they just don't have a lot of star power on that show. But there are some good characters and performers in that system, especially when they work against each other. But it's like, I don't think you can sit there, but there's no evidence showing that anybody coming from popularity in NXT resonates to popularity in the main system.
Okay, so let's disregard that. But then just looking at his look and his ability and the way
he needs to tighten up his work. I train professional wrestlers. Number one, his promos where he's doing, I'm talking like this and greetings and salutations. And so, that doesn't work. He's a big guy. He needs to talk like this and talk like he's going to whoop your, you know, he needs to talk more seriously in a more menacing way. Okay. Number one, because it's the way he looks like. He doesn't need to be like Shrek. He needs to be like Bob Sapp was. It was a killer, you know. So he said, "Game one, like you'll be low."
That wasn't his shtick in NXT, though, was it? Like it's been he's hamped it up because it's surely something that Vince wanted more of. Isn't Vince sent him in this direction?
There's good promos with Cross. Cross promos here where he's trying to act like he's well spoken and stuff. That ain't him. And second of all, he's had a couple opportunities where they've had like pull aparts or beatdowns, and his strikes have looked very, very weak. Right. And it's like to the point where they probably pulled him aside and said, "Bro, you gotta lay your shit in here, you know, if you want to draw money." But he's just very. He's working with the main guys, and he's worried about working too hard with them or something. That's what it, from a trained eye, that's what it looks like. But right. But I always tell guys, lay your shit in and apologize later, because on live TV you got to get yourself over, and he's missing opportunities to get himself over because he's green, you know.
So The main thing they do is they build up this three-way and this confrontation between Sheamus and Keith Lee and Drew's in the middle. Like, what do you think of this? Like, do you think this is a good spot for like Drew to be in and for his whatever his next feud is?
No, because it's rerun television. It's part of the rerun angle they do every time. What do they do in these situations every single time? It's like two of the characters are going to have odds with each other, and they're going to have a match against each other next week. If you go back in the history of their booking, this happens every single time. It's like that. There's not a lot of variations when they're presented. It's like if this was like a video game, like The Sims or something like this, like these character-driven video games were just like the options for storylines would not be very big. There would not be a very big list.
Right.
Option A, option B, option C. And we've seen these over and over and over. This is option A. The two guys, this is for three guys, two guys aren't getting along. What's going to happen? Oh, it's a tag match? It makes tag? Oh, they're going to hit each other. They're going to get mad at each other. It happens every single time.
You know? Ironically, they have this in their own computer games. They have this. They have a career mode in their own.
Bro, they're literally playing on their computer games on Reflex. Right. That's how simplistic. Bro, they don't even. They're letting the computer games program the show. That's probably why. Like, they don't even have bookers anymore. Like, let's just let AOS come out and do the show this week.
Oh, the programmers from 2K would write nothing worse than what Bruce Pritchard and those guys are doing now. But I mean, so did you work? Did you didn't work with? With Pritchard, because if you were at TNA,
I met him one time. It was a very good conversation. I met him at Booker T school. Right. I worked a show for Booker T, and then maybe he was down there and stuff. And I got along with him.
Okay.
We would get along. I could tell right now. Me and him would get along pretty well.
So there was no crossover because you were at TNA with Vince. So you were booking with Vince.
Nah. Maybe okay. I was there for no. Maybe I was at TNA for one show when he was there.
Right.
Yeah. But I spoke to him briefly, very, maybe, I don't recall. I've had the only real interaction I had with him was at Booker T school.
So you don't hold him like wholly or like largely responsible for this because it seems to have got a lot worse since he came in.
No, I blame everybody. I blame the way the workers are working. I blame the fact that these guys can't deliver promos. I blame the writers for writing bad promos and I blame the bookers for writing bad angles. And for letting the outrage culture or the fake outrage people get a hold of the show.
Social justice warriors.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you think
that's problematic?
Do you think
wrestling's not going to grow with a considerable amount of social justice warriors where we're trying to deliver content that 18 to 49 year old male audiences want to see, but the social justice warriors are trying to say, no, you can't give that to them.
Yeah, it's hard to build up storylines when people are offended by everybody. So that's why you kind
of, they're not offended either. They're just pretending to be offended because acting like you're offended gains you strength in the social argument.
Well, it's all Ryan Satin. It's all Ryan Satin syndrome, where you wake up in the morning looking to be offended by something, and then you decide to go on the Twitter about it. That's his whole shtick.
It's a path to relevance for a lot of these guys.
That's the only way when Ryan Satin is relevant. By doing this shtick since he came on the scene, but he's pissed off a lot of people since then, including a lot of the wrestlers. So, I mean,
he's on Fox now, so that's like he's not even really like a dirt sheet guy anymore.
Yeah,
it's really not. It's like he's worked for Fox. It's kind of funny that they would have. Yeah, but that's surprising though. I'm not surprised that Fox hired him. They probably wanted somebody to a market on that content. Like, why wouldn't you? I think it's fascinating that Vince never just took whatever chunk of change he had and just went and said, okay, I'm gonna hire Keltzer and Meller, Meller and Keltzer, or Meltzer and Keller.
To do what?
Just to do smart content on their site. Why not? It's like everybody knows shit's a work. Like the WWE.com trying to portray this as a work on their thing. It's like and letting all the dirt sheet guys garner that market for all that content and everything. Why didn't they just hire them and stick them on their site?
I mean,
it makes sense.
Need an appetite for it.
But look at all the content out there.
Yeah, but that content is considered to be insider information. Like the WWE wouldn't want, how can it come from?
They're already doing it. We're already watching documentaries, watching Braun Strowman crying. It's like, how much deeper behind the curtain do you have to get?
Right.
They're already behind the curtain. You know, it's like, so and you're letting a lot of this content, but everybody already knows it's out there for the right. You're saying, no, we can't fish in those ponds. It's like, why not? It's like everybody else is. It's like all your fan base is. It's like, why not just get those people that are throwing the fish in the water, bring them to our site and have draw that audience to our site.
Did you see the one where Liv Morgan, where they talked about where they actually
everybody cries these days. Every documentary is about somebody's crying.
Oh,
John is crying. Liv Morgan says that everybody's crying these days. Like, we're looking at the time of professional wrestling. The ratings are at the lowest point, and they're producing content showing all the characters crying. You can't even write that joke. You know, like, it's hysterical.
Liv's one actually talked about how she's being messed around creatively, how she was given false promises. You know, how she was made to turn up for 12 weeks without anything for her. Yeah. Like, that actually, like, really goes into burying the creative and such on a WWE Network show. I mean, me and Russo spoke about that and wondered, like, whether these shows actually get signed off for by WWE and whether someone like Vince McMahon actually even watches them or knows about them.
Yeah.
You need to go now, right?
You need to wrap it up. So
yeah, I actually said to Vince, I emailed him and said, pop on for the last like 5 minutes.
He's been showing up late. Actually, he's a schmuck. Hey, you guys all can catch me on @TheRealDisco on Twitter, @DiscoMasterGG on Instagram and Snapchat. I do Keeping 100 with Conan. Billy Body's been, I guess, a friend of the show, regular on the show. And that drops on MLW Radio and Spreaker on Thursdays. I'm on Vince Russo's podcast, Lions, Tigers, Bears, and Disco. I do on the Realm Network with him on Fridays on the Russo brand. And on his Patreon, on the Russo brand Patreon, I do a show called Time Out. And it's basically just me and Vince talk about current events and stuff. The Lions, Tigers, Bears, and Disco show is about the news. And with Conan on the Conan site, we have Conan.me, KONN.me is our Patreon. Tons of extra content, tons of fan interaction. A lot of roundtables with fans. We do an AEW NXT review every week after the show with fans, like for the patrons to come on and discuss the shows with us. So, like, and that's like some of the content we do. But everybody, check it out.